Hello, I'm Mariette Snyman. Welcome to Calm, Clear and Helpful, a weekly podcast series on taking good care of yourself and others, introducing you to a wide range of wellness professionals ready to inform and inspire. Today's topic is cognitive behavior therapy. Will it work for you? My guest is Dr. Kulinda Linde, clinical psychologist, CBT specialist, author, and speaker from Johannesburg. Welcome back on the show, Kulinda.
Thanks so much for having me again. It's always an absolute pleasure being on your shows. And this is such a good topic. You know, it's really close to my heart. So I'd be very excited about this one.
Yes. And to our listeners, thank you for joining us. After our conversation, Kulinda will give us three mental health tips, and then it will be fun question time. Kulinda, could you please start by telling us about your work?
With pleasure. So I first encountered CBT, that's cognitive behavior therapy, with Eddie Wolf, a clinical psychologist and probably the first CBT therapist in South Africa. And he worked with my mom, who had panic disorder, and I couldn't believe what he was able to do because she was quite stubborn, let's just say that. And this must have been in the mid-80s. And then a few years later, my mom and Eddie were chatting about something else, and I was very unhappy at Ritz because it was very psychodynamic, which is very Freud-based. And I just felt, you know, it was a little bit too much digging and the therapist wasn't very active and it wasn't quite what I thought psychology was going to be. And Eddie suggested to my mom, well, have a look at RAL, which is UJ now. And I'd never thought about that for honors and masters. And he said, you know, you'll like the CBT. He gave me something to read and I loved it. So I'm a very practical kind of eldest daughter. So it definitely appealed to me. And then during honors, Eddie taught us the CBT component, and we were looking at all the different kinds of therapy, so it wasn't just the psychodynamic, and I really liked it. And when I got into clinical masters the next year, the main therapy that they were teaching was systemic, which makes a lot of sense from a conceptual point of view, but I missed the practical and the science. So while I did the systemic masters with everyone else, I also saw Prof. Wolf every week, and he taught me CBT across those 2 years. And my master's dissertation, that was part of the course, was also on CBT with borderline personality, and I really got to apply what I was learning. So we covered all of the CBT, the first wave, and that's the behavioral stuff like conditioning, desensitization, and then the second wave, which is from Albert Ellis, the rational emotive therapy. Basically where you confront negative thoughts and then you replace them with rational options. And then we also did some cognitive therapy, which was created by Aaron Beck in the late 60s. And then especially for the borderline personality, there's a form of CBT called schema-focused cognitive therapy. And this was created by Jeffrey Young. So Prof. Wolf taught me all of these things across those 2 years. And this happened through my master's, 91, 92. And I must say, I absolutely loved it. Maybe it's just because I'm a skeptic, but I love the research. And of course, it's practical and it's fast. And then fast forward to my doctorate, which took me a while since I'd first worked somewhere and then gone into practice. And again, I was using CBT, this time with cancer and anxiety. So it was really powerful. And by then, I'd taken myself off to the US to quite a lot of CBT congresses, and there were highlights, which I think I'll never forget. The first of them was when I met Dr. David Barlow, and he's the father of CBT for panic, which is what Eddie used with my mom, and I also spent a bit of time at his unit in Boston. And fortunately, I met him 3 times, because the first time, I must honestly say, I was just thinking, this is Barlow. This is Dr. David H. Barlow. You know, I don't know what he said to me, but he was very kind. He saw this bright-eyed person, and I think he understood. And he actually said Joseph Wolpe, who is from South Africa, was actually one of his teachers, and he loves South Africans. And he's always very, very sweet when South Africans meet him. So that was the one. Then I also got to attend a live discussion with Dr. Aaron Beck, and he was the father of cognitive therapy, which was amazing. There he was in his late 80s and just demonstrating this wonderful Socratic questioning style. It was amazing. And then at one of the later congresses, I actually met Dr. Jeffrey Young, who's the creator of schema therapy, and was just wonderful, such a warm, warm, kind man. So I went to as many as possible over the years, and there were lots of masterclasses with people like Borkovec, Edna Foa, Ron Rippey. So in the CBT world, these are royalty. And what really struck me was that they were so knowledgeable and, you know, maybe skeptical like me as well, liking the research. But with that, so human and so generous with their time. And you can just imagine this bright-eyed South African girl in my element, immersed in the CBT. And then if we bring it closer to the present, by then in the late 90s, I'd met the other CBT psychologist in South Africa. He was the second, Kevin Bolon. And he became a mentor, like a big brother to me. And we both had a passion to spread CBT because it's so effective and it's evidence-based. It works incredibly well with anxiety, depression, bipolar, sleep, eating. You know, I could go on and on. And in a country like ours with so few resources, it totally makes sense to help people quickly and effectively. And then what's even better is they have the skills to do their own CBT when they leave. So if we're looking at today, I'm now in my 32nd year of practice, which I can't believe, and I've trained many people over the years, and I haven't really done too much of that over the last 8-9 years, but I do have a wonderful group of CBT therapists who I've trained and who work alongside me, and they're self-starters. They've gone for their own training with the experts. They're really wonderful. And finally, I've added a lot of third wave CBT, which is mainly mindfulness and the unified protocol. And that's got a lot more to do with emotion regulation, which the original CBT didn't have. So I'll chat more about that later. And, you know, something which is, I think, quite important is that clearly CBT keeps your mind healthy. So Aaron Beck died at age 100 in 2021. And David Barlow, who's now 82, created the Unified Protocol. This is the new kind of CBT when he was in his 70s. So, yeah, I think it's very good for you. And so this is me and CBT today. And I also hope to be practicing and teaching for at least another 20 years, maybe longer.
Good. Thank you, Kalinda. Now, there has been such a lot of talk about CBT. Could you explain what it is?
Yes. I think it's actually best to answer it by comparing CBT to the other two main types of therapy that people know, either what you've seen in the movies or what you've done yourself. So I did mention WITS and the psychodynamic therapies, and those were the dominant therapies in South Africa for a long time, and they're probably the best known. So these are that classic on the couch, you speak, and the therapist will listen. Occasionally we'll say something interpreting or processing something around the past in order to understand the present. And a lot of it is about why. But what I don't enjoy about it is it's very much the bad why. You know, why did this hurt you? Why did this happen to you? Why do you do this negative thing? And it's also quite a gradual process because there's a lot more of the therapist listening than engaging. And they talk about the frame, which is a neutral space. So I think for some people that works well. But I really felt that the CBT was much lighter for me, but I'm coming back to that. So then the other kind is person-centered therapy, and that is very warm, very supportive. You get to release your emotion. It's in a safe space. You can get some advice, but mostly you'll just be supported and encouraged while you either expressing or going through something. And this can also be quite prolonged until you're over the crisis and you can cope on your own. But neither of these really give you skills. So this is where we get to the CBT. So it's a very different approach. It's much briefer. It's focused on the here and now. And of course, the past brings you here, but we're more looking at what of the past is still present in the now. And then it also involves teamwork between you, the therapist and the client, and you mutually identify the problem and you're co-creating potential solutions. A lot of practical steps, a lot of techniques, methods. We also look at obstacles to your progress, your negative habits or beliefs, or you can't control your emotions. And you learn a lot of skills that help you to actively make the changes you want. So in a nutshell, CBT is about the relationship between your thoughts, your emotions, and your actions. And what I find very interesting is that people usually come to see me because of problem behaviors or habits or actions. But actually, it's more about the thoughts and feelings that drive those behaviors. And if you like, I could give some examples about how that interacts.
Yes, would you like to do that now?
Well, maybe I can do it now while people are thinking about the relationship between
yes.
thoughts, emotions, and actions.
Yes.
So one of the classic examples would be someone who can't say no, or somebody who can't relax and they take on too much. So that would be a typical behavior that they come in with. So let's look at the thoughts. So the C of CBT is your cognitions or your thoughts, and there are two levels of these. So on the one level, it's your automatic thoughts. So somebody says, can you please help me with? And your automatic behavior is yes, because your automatic thought was say yes, you must. Okay. So the automatic thoughts are to do with yourself and others and the world. And then underneath those are core beliefs about yourself, others, and the world. So say, for example, your thoughts were things like, if not me, then who? Or I've got to do it perfectly. I'll do it better. You know, let me help them. I can't put my burden on them. So those could be some of your thoughts on the surface. But underneath could be core beliefs like, I must fix it or otherwise I'll be in trouble. Or somebody else will be hurt if I don't. Or it must be perfect. And these would be things like conditional worth or when someone's been parentified, you know, a child has grown up too early. So the thoughts, we follow them down to get to the core beliefs and then we work there. But of course, the other thing involved here is feeling. So that very same thing, someone who can't say no or relax takes on too much. The feeling there might be guilt if you don't say yes, or anxiety that they won't like you anymore or they'll be angry with you if you say no. And then later on, there's a resentment for always having to be the one doing everything. So you can see that there's a relationship between the thoughts and the feelings, physical and emotion, and then also how those two things drive the behaviors. So we'll talk a little bit more about the process later, but this is just to get people thinking along the right track.
Yes, thank you. You mentioned that the therapist and the client do teamwork.
Yes. So it's a very, very different relationship. So the technical term for it is called collaborative empiricism. So I'll explain that in English. Mm. So collaborative means we work together to make sense of where you are, where you want to be, and then how do we get you there as soon as we can. So that's very much collaborative. It's very light. So when you come to a therapy session, it's light, relatively informal. You ask a question, you get an answer. If I want to know something, I'll ask you. I won't be trying to figure it out or get it out of you. So very collaborative also in terms of choosing the techniques, the goals. And we very much are a team. You know, I know my field very well, but you know you very well. So I'm going to ask you questions. You can ask me questions. We can both make suggestions. So that's the collaborative side of it. And then the empiricism means that CBT has been widely researched and tested for a very long time. So we know that it works.
Kalinda, CBT is evidence-based. What does that mean?
That's a very good question. So when I was saying collaborative empiricism, this is the empirical part, which means evidence-based. So it all started in the 1920s. When Pavlov was conditioning the dogs with the food and the bell. And then we had people like Skinner and Bandura and even Barlow. And all along, the emphasis has always been on evidence. What works? Why does it work? And the big one, can it be replicated again and again? And then since about the late 90s, there have been a lot more studies that have shown that CBT really works well In fact, it's as effective as medication in anxiety and depression. And it's also a protective factor for relapse prevention. And what really helped us is that we can actually look into the brain now. So there's a thing called an fMRI machine, and it tests the blood flow in the brain. So you can actually see what's lighting up when somebody's doing CBT. So really, in a nutshell, for all the skeptics out there, me as well, it's evidence-based, as in, you know, there is evidence. This is what works. This is what's going wrong. This is why. How do we fix it? We know what's going to fix it. So, you know, for me, that's quite reassuring. You're not just hoping for the best or, well, here's a theory, it's interesting, let's hope that it's going to work.
Yeah. You did mention some issues or conditions that can successfully be addressed by CBT. Would you like to say more about this?
Yes, definitely. So the first and foremost would be anxiety and depression. So anxiety being panic, social anxiety, OCD, that sort of thing, and all sorts of depression, bipolar disorder, stress management and building resilience. Definitely we're using it these days on work-life balance. We use it on personal branding even, you know, finding meaning. And then things like eating disorders, sleep disorders. So those are just to name a few. And over the last 20 years or so, it's starting to be used in things like schizophrenia and other kinds of psychosis. So it's definitely proven that it works incredibly well and probably more than any other kind of therapy for all of these conditions.
Which skills are taught during CBT? You mentioned that that clients get tools, and how are they taught?
Okay, so it always starts with psychoeducation. So say you come in with panic. We want you to know the essentials about the condition, and then it's less scary, and then you can also work with us more equally as a team player. So even if someone's depressed and they're feeling horrible and flat and not very motivated, we still want them to understand this is the negative cognitive filter, this is why we're going to do the behavioral activation. So there's a big part at the beginning, psychoeducation. And with that part is the history and then the behavioral analysis. So the history can be quite brief because we're more interested in the highlights and the lowlights and then what is relevant now. And what we're also looking for is where did it go right as well as where did it go wrong in the past, and where right now are you getting it right? So, for example, maybe you're very good at problem solving, but because there's this big anxiety thought spiral, you can't get into it right now, but you do know how to do that. Or maybe you're really, really good at using humor to diffuse a situation. So we look at that, you know, what skills do you already have? And then say you come in with a procrastination issue. Well, where do you not procrastinate? And then we look at what's the difference in your thoughts, the context, etc. And then we often look at, well, this is how you motivate yourself. So let's bring that into where you don't feel motivated. So we do a lot of that at the beginning, but we do it very much collaboratively. Once we've done that, then we set goals that we can measure. And what we're really looking for, we usually do about 3 goals at a time. And we're looking for change in terms of frequency or intensity. So, for example, are you having less all bad days? Maybe you had one good day in the week or one semi-good part of the day, say with depression or with panic. You're not having it every day, you're having it every third day, and the intensity is less. So we look for that to see if what we're doing is working. And if there's no change or not enough, what we look for is there any kind of subtle avoidance or resistance? Could there be an unconscious anxiety about changing? But what's different to CBT is we do this in a discussion with no judgment. And we also look at ourselves as the therapist. You know, we're so familiar with these techniques, maybe we didn't quite get it across fully, or maybe the fit wasn't great. The person's just too busy to do a 20-minute exercise, so you've got to come up with a 5-minute. So that this is very much a troubleshooting. So we set a goal, we come up with a plan, and then we assess it when the person comes back If it went right, fabulous, repeat on the next goal. And if it didn't, then we look at why, and very much as a team. And what the therapist is doing is drawing from our own skills database. And then we try to match the skill to the problem and to the person. So do they need a skill like assertion training? Are they maybe too aggressive, so they need to learn assertion? Are they very quiet? They don't like conflict, so it'll be a more subtle kind of assertion. Or do they need a protocol for anxiety or for insomnia? Do they need a technique to help them relax? Which one's going to fit the best? And then we see which one is going to fit best for them, for their life. And then we go like that every single week, you know, looking at how did they meet the goals. And we keep checking, you know, is this still a good fit for you? So the core of it is really looking for the relationship between the thoughts, feelings, and behaviors. And are all three of those moving in the right direction? And then as we identify links or possible obstacles or maybe subtle resistances, we share that with the client. And then they can also input about how they feel. Does this resonate or not? Does this insight resonate or not? Is it working or not?
On your website, Thoughts First, you say that CBT is a faster approach to psychological issues. How many sessions would CBT typically comprise?
The average number is normally 8, and it really depends what the issue is. So if, for example, it's uncomplicated panic, it might be 4 sessions. But if there's been a lot of agoraphobia, where you don't do shops, you don't drive, you don't do movies, it might be 12 sessions. But typically, it would be not longer than 12 sessions. And this would be for anxiety, for depression, stress, insomnia, that kind of thing. If it's something chronic, and say it's something like an OCD or quite a severe generalized anxiety, and especially if the person cannot or will not take medication, then you might do 8 sessions and then stretch your other 4. It might even go up to 16 if it's something that's been there for a long time and it's quite severe. And I'm definitely mentioning medication here, be it homeopathic, be it allopathic, because that obviously helps to make the person more reachable for therapy. But typically, it wouldn't take much longer than that in all of the disorders that I've mentioned. One exception here may be if there's an extreme personality disorder, you know, somebody who's maybe had a psychosis with it or been suicidal and been hospitalized, that can take a little longer. So that might be stretched out to over, say, 3 to 4 months. But that's the longest that usually it would take.
The other question I wanted to ask is that we all know struggling with mental health issues still carries a stigma. If somebody is listening and they would like to try CBT, but they don't feel comfortable getting psychological help, what would you tell them?
So when you choose a style of therapy, it's actually best to think about what you want out of the process. So do you feel that you want to take time to understand and explore the why of what's going on with you? Or do you feel that you just want to be heard, maybe be contained, supported? So the first would be psychodynamic. The second would be more person-centered. Or do you feel ready to work actively on changing the situation? And then you would definitely be more keen on CBT. So really, at the end of the day, it depends on what your need is and what you want to get out of the process. So things like Jungian or dream analysis, you can do that. If it's meaning or purpose, you can do logotherapy. So at the end of the day, it really is about, you know, do you want practical solutions? Do you want them to work quickly? And I think that's quite helpful. So if you're not sure, you know, you're thinking, I like CBT, but I still feel a bit weird about turning up in a therapist's office, you can go to sadag.org. There are a lot of videos and articles on there. Or you can go to thoughtsfirst.com. Or there are lots of websites. One that I really like is called Very Well Mind. And there's a lot of good online CBT. Have a look at it and then see if it resonates. And if you're still not sure about the kinds of therapies, you can go to my site kalindalinda.com and look in the frequently asked questions section, and that explains a summary of the different kinds of therapies. And then finally, it is very, very important that there's a good fit between you and the therapist. It's not just the kind of therapy, but it's also you as people. If it's a work-life issue, do they have children? Does it matter to you whether they did or didn't? If it's a marital thing, you know, would you prefer that they're a little older? Maybe they've been married themselves. So I think it's very important to have a session with a therapist. Most of us have websites so you can get a sense, and then see if you feel that I think there's a resonance, I think there's a good fit in terms of our values and personality. But definitely you can start online first. A lot of very good CBT available.
Thank you. That's good advice. And at this stage, I'll just say that I will either attach the links to these websites to the podcast, or they will be in the podcast notes. Now, I would like to know if you have an interesting story of someone benefiting from CBT.
So there are lots and lots of examples, but I'm going to give you one to do with panic, because that is my favorite thing in the world. So somebody I saw recently, we'll call her B. Her husband drove her to the session. She had panic disorder, so she couldn't drive at all. And there was an accident on the road, so she arrived late. And she arrived 40 minutes late, crying, which I can imagine it must have been harrowing, sitting in the car and panicking in the first session. And we only had 20 minutes left. So initially, I worked on the behavioral and on the emotional. So we did some breathing just to calm her down. And then I did a little bit of explanation about panic and really just connecting. So a little bit of the psychoeducation. And once we'd done that, she was a bit more receptive, but then our time was gone. So I gave her my panic book to go and read so that she could continue the psychoeducation. And then she came back for the next session and we checked her understanding. Did she have any questions? I explained a little bit more. And she had one fear around exposures, which she'd read about in the book. And I just explained how it works and why. And then we actually did it in the session, the introceptive deconditioning exposure. And I had asked that her husband attend so that he could learn to see what we were doing and then also learn what to do and what not to do. In the next session, we worked on the panic thoughts and the anxiety. And then I taught her some breathing techniques. And the session after that, I explained exposure. And then we did one together. So we drove around for half an hour with the husband as a backseat driver. And that was him learning how to do it. And from the second session, so just for the psychoeducation and then the exposure therapy, she'd had no panic attacks. And she was now feeling that she was ready to go on the road. So we made an exposure hierarchy and off they went. So I let them loose with that for a month. And when she comes back next, we're going to be working on stress and just how stress at work has actually contributed to the panic. And we'll probably then meet 2-3 more times just to check the underlying things. And then in maybe 3 months' time and in 6 months' time, if she needs it, to check the progress.
That's amazingly practical.
Yeah. In this case, it was a panic protocol where, say, even insomnia, I do a lot of that. That would also be a protocol that takes about 4 sessions. But say if it were to do with stress or assertion, then maybe it wouldn't be so much protocols as models. And then the person would go away and, you know, they would assess what was going on. And then depending what they bring back, we'll see how many sessions we need.
A quick note on what I do. I'm a content entrepreneur creating podcasts and articles on living a happier and healthier life by interviewing coaches, therapists, and other wellness experts from over the world. You'll find this content on my website, www.marietsneeman.com. www.cbt.co.za, and it's there to help you find just the right helping professional when you need one. If you're a wellness expert keen on getting more in-person or online clients, or creating worldwide awareness of an issue close to your heart, let's talk about co-creating a podcast or article, or perhaps featuring you in a South African magazine. You'll find more information under services on my website. To each listener, no matter your age, occupation, or where you live, how about creating your very own personal audio recording with me as a one-of-a-kind gift to someone you deeply care for? In this private interview with me, you can express your love for your partner, leave a legacy to your children or grandchildren, honor your mum or dad or a mentor. The possibilities are endless. To find out more, just click on Gift Podcasts on my website. Now, back to my guest. Kalinda, how can CBT be used in group therapy?
You can actually use CBT individually, groups, couples. And the benefit of groups is that everybody else has the same issue. So it becomes a safer space to practice the skills that you learn. And if you think about something like social phobia, where the thing you're terrified of is socializing or public speaking, everybody in that room feels exactly the same. So we do social skills groups and then public speaking, that version of social anxiety. We also do work-life balance groups sometimes. It tends to be more the working moms. Stress and resilience, assertion, relaxation, and mindfulness. And I've also in the past done bipolar groups with families as well as the person themselves. And it works incredibly well because you've got support. Everybody else in the room is going through the same thing. And I'm sure there are many other things we can do group CBT with too.
Yes. And before we talk about where people can reach you, just one more question. Are there many CBT practitioners in South Africa?
You know, I could stand corrected, but I'd say it's still a handful. And what I unfortunately need to say is that CBT is a bit of a fashion these days. And I think it's because the medical aides like it. And so, unfortunately, there are people who do an online course or a weekend course. And even if it is a real CBT course, it's not enough. You know, would you trust a heart surgeon who'd done an online or a weekend course? I don't think I would. And then, unfortunately, this is not proper CBT. So I've had to fix mistakes, like doing an exposure in the first session. You know, you can't do that if somebody's got a phobia. You definitely can't do that in the first session. Or not understanding that they also need to look at the core beliefs, or missing the second order fears or resistance, and then they can't understand why things are not getting better. So I would say there are maybe 15 in South Africa that I know are properly trained, experienced CBT therapists. I know because I've trained a good 10 of them. And then I would guess maybe another 20 who are probably quite good at CBT. There are some groups who are very good at the rational emotive therapy. There's a group in Cape Town that's known for that. But I'm not talking, you know, people who experienced across the board. And unfortunately, there is some training at universities, but it's very basic. So I always believe you need to apprentice. That's what I did, and that's what I've done with all the people I've trained. So they work alongside an experienced CBT person with supervision for 3 to 6 months. And that's really the best way to immerse yourself and do your own CBT. And then you can obviously understand it at a deep level and then do it with others.
Thank you. Where can listeners learn more about your work? And I was also thinking of the groups, you know, if they're interested in one of the groups.
Yes, yes. So they could look on kalindalinda.com, and there's a lot of information there. All the free goodies are on thoughtsfirst.com. And then I post quite regularly on Instagram and on Facebook. That's under Dr. Kalinda Linda. And then sadag.org. There are a lot of my videos on there, so they can have a look at that. And then my workshops, which combine CBT with things like journaling and mindfulness, are also on Instagram and Facebook, and they're called Wisdom Circle Workshops. So I'd be more than happy for people to have a look at these, and if they want to get in touch, all my contact details are on there.
You have CBT tips downloads on Thoughts First. I saw CBT anxiety and worry tips and CBT panic tips. Tell us more about this.
Yes. So Thoughts First, as far as I know, is the only free CBT South African website, and I hope that there'll be more over time. But it's basically my contribution to make sure that people get good quality CBT and also for free. So in South Africa, we've got about 60 million people. And if we look at the stats, which say that one in three is struggling with their mental health, that's 20 million people. Now, if we also look at some of the research recently, there's one psychiatrist and three psychologists per 100,000 people. So that is really not going to help. And most of them are not CBT trained. And there are a lot of people waiting for their community service. So, you know, there are some resources, but not enough. So at least this is my small contribution to making sure that people get good quality CBT.
And it's an excellent website. I'd like to add that.
Thank you.
Do say more about your books, Get the Balance Right and Dealing with Panic the CBT Way.
Okay, so these are available on Thoughts First, and Get the Balance Right is also available on Kindle. So panic is my passion, and Dealing with Panic the CBT Way has got all my secrets, all the essentials. Get the Balance Right came out of my own struggle with balancing my first child, my career, and my twins, who were born 21 years ago, and then my advocacy work with SADAG. And when my babies were a year old, I actually got cancer. And it's all fine now, but I'd never taken 6 weeks off, and there I was having to. And I thought, how on earth did this go so horribly wrong, and why? And while I was lying there recovering from the surgery, I created a model using all the CBT tips that I've spoken about already. What's going wrong? What's going right? And basically, I made this model for the working parent and everything you juggle. And then I started looking, well, which techniques are actually going to work for each of these? And then how do we balance things? So that's where that one came from. Panic, of course, is my passion. My mom had it, so it's close to my heart. And it was my introduction to CBT. And I'm partway with transforming the panic book into an online course. And then I've also got all these projects, generalized anxiety and stress, half-finished books and courses. So hopefully over December, when I get a bit of downtime, I'll be doing those and a million others.
Mm. You did mention SADAG, the South African Depression and Anxiety Group. And I must say that you've been involved there, I think, for 20 years.
Yes, actually, we had our 30-year anniversary recently, and I did the maths. It's actually 27 years. Can you believe?
Mm. And I have the greatest respect for SADAG and the work everybody there that does.
Thanks, Mariette. You know, I think all of us who are involved, and once you join, you never leave, really, because it's close to everyone's heart in terms of advocacy for people who don't have rights or don't have the knowledge or don't have resources. And, you know, we take on everybody in the press, the medical aides, et cetera, et cetera. There was a terrible Ezra Dumeni tragedy. We were very much involved in that. And, you know, at the moment, there's a terrible situation with anxiety and depression with young kids. So we've got a team called the Scouts that go out and educate at schools about suicide and depression and anxiety. So it's an absolutely wonderful group to be part of and growing from strength to strength. So if you have a little bit of time, I encourage everybody to go and have a look on the website. You'll see support groups, information, all sorts of exciting things.
Yeah. Please, could we now have your three mental health tips?
Okay. So the first one is on stigma. That's also something very close to my heart. So I'm going to do a little thought experiment with everybody. So if we think about the word discrimination, I know that's also a taboo word, but think about it in its core meaning. So if, say, for example, if you're a cat and you're looking around and you see another cat or you see a bird or you see a human or you see a frog, you can discriminate. This is a friend, a foe, a food, unknown. So all of us discriminate. You know, we do. But when we add the layer of judgment, that's when the stigma comes. So what I was saying earlier about mental health, one in three. So if you're that one in the three who's struggling with your mental health, of course, it's terrible to be feeling that as it is. And then if the other two are discriminating, well, I'm not struggling right now, and then adding the layer of judgment, that's where stigma is born. So I would like to request that we actually demonstrate that we're just discriminating. I'm the one in the three, or I'm the two in the three right now, and stop right there. So we don't want the stigma to be that layer of judgment that comes next in our speech, in our actions, or in our thoughts. So that's number one. Number two, I'm very passionate about learning. So whatever you learned, you can unlearn and relearn. And that's the beauty of being a human being. So if you think about South Africa, you know, we're learning new place names all the time. You change your role, maybe at work, or you get married. Now you're a Mrs. if you're a woman, if you want to be, or a Ms., you're thinking about it, maybe a different surname. So there are many, many times when we're having to learn to be something new. At school, I was so-and-so's mom. At work, I'm something else. So whatever you've learned, you can unlearn. The brain is very, very flexible. So if you come for CBT, that's exactly what you're going to be doing. You didn't get born with those negative thoughts or bad habits, and so you can unlearn and relearn. And then finally, repetition is the mother of all learning. So that's an African proverb. Don't give up. Imagine if you were a baby and you pulled yourself up against a chair or something and you fell down and you thought, well, that's it. I'm never going to walk. You're going to carry me forever. So we just need to repeat, repeat, repeat. And then it becomes natural. So I love that African proverb.
Thank you. They are very valuable, these tips. May I now ask you your fun question?
Yes, please go ahead.
At some stage, Kalinda, stress balls were all the rage. My question is, if you could be any object that people could smell or hold or touch to calm them down, what would you like to be?
There are a lot of things that I'd like to be, but I think the Disney movie Big Hero, if you haven't seen it, look it up. There was a big, white, squishy, inflatable robot called Baymax, and I feel, from a comfort perspective, that I would love to hug or be hugged by a big, squishy, inflatable robot. I would make myself warm like a Care Bear. So I suppose it would be a hybrid between a Care Bear and Baymax.
Oh, that sounds like a very good idea. So thank you, Kalinda, for spending time with us and telling us so much about CBT. And I really hope that for many of us, this type of therapy will sound like one that will be practical and approachable to use should we need it.
I really hope this has helped to explain it and for people to realize that the therapy session will be completely different. You won't be paying someone to torture you and you won't be leaving like a wreck. And the best part is you'll learn how to do your own CBT and then you don't need us.
Yeah.
That's how we like it.
Thank you. And to our listeners, it was good of you to join us. If you found this episode helpful, please share it with someone you care about. Go to my website, www.marietsneeman.co.za, for this episode's podcast notes and for free podcasts and articles on how to live a happier and healthier life and have more fulfilling relationships. To follow me on Facebook, Instagram, or LinkedIn, just search for Mariette Snyman Journalist. The podcast series, Calm, Clear and Helpful, is produced by me with original music by Mart Marie Snyman. Catch you next Tuesday at 9:00.